not corporations. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So lots of questions to get to on this Supreme Court nominee, which is why we've asked Elliot Mintzberg to come talk with us. He's a senior fellow over at People for the American Way. Elliot, thanks for taking time for us.
Pleasure to be with you, Rick.
So, you know, I'm looking at this nominee, and my first thought is, you know, kiss the 20th century goodbye.
Well, there's no question that his narrow-minded elitist philosophy would roll back much of the social safety net of the 20th century. He's argued that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was unconstitutional in one dissent because it didn't give enough power to the president to fire the head of the CFP. He's consistently tried to reverse decisions protecting workers by the National Labor Relations Bureau. He's argued that the FCC didn't even have the power to pass the net neutrality rules that they passed, which have since been repealed by the Trump administration. He says they didn't even have the power to do it. On health care, he's twice dissented from decisions of the D.C. Circuit that upheld the constitutionality of the ACA. Roe versus Wade, abortion rights, you name the issue, Kavanaugh is somewhere in the 18th, maybe the 17th century on a lot of those issues.
Wow, going back that far. I was giving him the 1880s. You know, so we're going even further back than
that. All right. I'll give him the 1880s. That's fair.
Because, you know, I'm looking at this, and, you know, the Washington Post, you know, article out today that, you know, here's a guy who doesn't have a lot of assets, ran into some credit card debt. You would think this would be a guy who the credit card companies have stuck it to. He'd go, you know, maybe I want some protections. Evidently not.
To the contrary, he is consistently ruling in favor of corporations and against the little guy, whether it's a worker or a consumer or somebody who cares about the air they breathe and the water they drink. We're putting out a report in the afternoon, tomorrow, Thursday, focusing on the dissents that he's written to decisions by other judges in the D.C. Circuit, which is a real mix of both progressive and very conservative judges. He's dissented more often per year of service than any other judge on the D.C. Circuit, often dissenting from conservative Republicans. For example, he dissented from a ruling by two conservative Republicans that it was okay for D.C. to pass a law that banned assault rifles. Kavanaugh claimed that even that was illegal under the Second Amendment.
Yeah, you know, the thought is, and I remember when Trump got elected, I have a fairly conservative friend who said it's going to be interesting watching liberals turn into states' rights advocates, to which I responded, well, it's going to be interesting watching states' rights advocates turn into federalists and wanting, you know, federal power. And this is kind of what we're seeing, a reversal of roles, because I've got a lot of my liberal friends going, well, yeah, they can do that on the federal level, but, you know, we'll fight it at the states. And I'm going, well, not if they consolidate enough power on the federal level. I'm curious, you know, how do you see that working out?
Well, I think it would be a mix. I mean, certainly others of the conservatives on the Supreme Court do have some belief in states' rights. But you're absolutely right. There is, after all, this minor little thing called the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution that generally makes federal laws supreme over any conflicting state law,
right.
And particularly as long as the Republicans continue to control Congress and the presidency, that combination of that and a five-justice majority on the court sponsored by the Federalist Society, which is what we'll have if Kavanaugh gets confirmed, could very easily make it much more difficult, not impossible, but more difficult, at least in some areas, for states' rights to prevail.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but, you know, here's the thing. I used to believe that there were some states' rights conservatives on the court, and then came Janus versus AFSCME, which usurped the states, 22 states' rights, and imposed national right to work on those states who had the right already to choose to be right to work states if they so chose. But our Supreme Court, you know, just decided you don't have a right to do that.
You're absolutely right about that. And for those who say, oh, precedents like Roe versus Wade won't be overturned. In the Janus case, they overturned a case decided 4 years after Roe versus Wade, with no compunction at all, just basically said, we think this one is wrong. And I think everything we've seen from Kavanaugh and the other conservative justices on the court, the Federalist majority, which we may have soon, suggests that they are quite willing to do that, not to mention decisions that protect LGBT equality and many others. Because the key here is that it was one thing to essentially substitute Gorsuch for Scalia, which is what happened last year. But now you're talking about Kavanaugh for Kennedy. And even though Kennedy was quite conservative, he voted, unfortunately, with the majority in that Janus case. There were a number of issues, LGBT rights, reproductive rights, civil rights, and abuse of presidential power, where at least some of the time Kennedy voted with moderates to protect citizens. And without Kennedy, and with him being replaced by a hard right justice like Kavanaugh, we're going to see even worse than what we've seen with Gorsuch on the court.
Yeah, no, you've said the Federalist Society a couple of times, and I don't think a lot of people know who this fairly secretive group is, and the kind of power that they wield. And this is another one of those billionaire-backed groups who, you know, they're pushing that original intent mentality. Can you explain who they are a little bit?
Sure. The Federalist Society was founded in the early 1980s. Justice Scalia was very important in getting them going, and it is a right-wing group of law students and lawyers and government officials that has been extremely influential on every Republican president we've had. As I've said, four justices already have been approved in large part because the Federalist Society recommended them. And the list of 25 that Trump put together during his campaign was essentially written by the Federalist Society. And talk about your appeal of much of the 20th century, a lot of their propaganda, as you can see from an article on them on our website, it attempts to try to repeal the New Deal, bring us back to the days when corporations and rich people ruled, and effectively dismantle the social safety net that the New Deal began the creation of. They have every right to do what they do. They're a private association, but they're extremely dangerous. They are backed by far-right billionaire groups. Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society basically is one of President Trump's prime couple of consultants on who to pick, not just for the Supreme Court, but for the courts below that,
all of them, right,
where Trump has already set a record pace at getting confirmed people on the Court of Appeals one step below the Supreme Court.
No, the Republicans have really done a masterful job of blocking Democratic presidents from being able to appoint justices. They did it all during the Obama years, did it masterfully during the Clinton years, to where you had Bush, who was able to pack a bunch of judges in, and now you've got Trump, who, you know, packing all those judges in that the Republicans held up during the Obama years. So let me ask you about Kavanaugh. Barring any, you know, any major things, I don't know, like a dead hooker or live boys, is there any chance of stopping him from sitting on the bench?
There is definitely a chance. It is a narrow path, but it is a path. Basically, as things break down, there are five key senators here. And remember that the Senate is basically 50-49 now because of the fact that Senator McCain is, unfortunately for him, effectively out of service,
right,
and the Democrats won the election in Alabama. So it's 50-49. We need a net of one Republican vote. So if it's possible to get one Republican, say a Senator Collins or Murkowski, who claim that they're very concerned about reproductive choice, and if we can hold Democrats, particularly the three who voted for Gorsuch, Senator Donnelly from Indiana, Senator Manchin from West Virginia, and Senator Heitkamp from North Dakota, we basically need four out of those five senators. If we can get four out of those five senators, we have a path to block Kavanaugh. It's a very narrow path, but it's possible, and it'll depend on your listeners and many others around the country. What we need to do is to pressure generally pressure all of your senators, but pressure those five in particular. And if you don't live in one of those five states, reach out to people who do and tell them they need to contact their senator and tell them to vote against this guy who, as you put it, would roll back much of the 20th century. That's critical. It's the only way we're going to win. It was the way I was on a call yesterday along with Senator Booker and Senator Warren, who were expressing great leadership with literally thousands of people, four members, and they pointed out we did that when it came to the ACA. We were able to get one or two Republican senators to stand up against repeal. We need to get one or two to stand up against this incredible threat to all of our rights and liberties.
No, absolutely. And I hope that, you know, Booker and Warren and the rest of them, I hope the Democrats use this as an opportunity to really wake up the American people to what's going on. Because you look at the Federalist Society, they're all part of that corporate money, that billionaire money that, you know, sprung out of the John Birch Society, out of, you know, the Powell memo in 71 that brought us Heritage and ALEC and all of these, you know, the State Policy Network and all of this moneyed infrastructure that has really hijacked our government. You know, we've almost got a shadow government in this country of conservative moneyed folks who run all of the appointees and run all of the politics. And I don't think that most people, you know, when I bring this up, people are like, oh, that sounds too conspiratorial. No, it's exactly what they've done.
Well, and now under Trump, a lot of those people in the shadows are moving right into the sunlight, like Betsy DeVos and finally recently resigned EPA administrator, who was one of the worst examples. These are folks that Trump is putting in charge of our government. And they are backed, as you say, by lots of dark money from lots of right-wing groups. And they also have the advantage of the fact that ever since the school prayer decisions and Roe versus Wade, the right has realized how critical the Supreme Court and the lower courts are. And I think progressives are beginning to wake up, but we don't have time for further wake-up exercises. We need to be woken up completely now and to get on the phone and do everything we can to organize and to stop this incredible threat to our rights and our liberties and the 20th century.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I wanted to ask you about the New York Times story that just came out. They're saying that Rod Rosenstein has reached out to the nation's 93 U.S. attorneys and asked for staff. Evidently that out of his office, they're going to be pursuing, you know, some vetting. They're going to be going through some of the documents of Justice Kavanaugh or Judge Kavanaugh. Is this unusual to have, you know, the deputy, you know, attorney general, you know, putting together a squad, a vet squad? Is this unusual?
It's unusual to reach out to U.S. attorneys. Usually this is done, this kind of work is done by people in the main Justice Department. But Kavanaugh has, people have estimated, maybe more than a million pages that need to be gone through and hopefully all given to the Senate Judiciary Committee for there to use. It's conceivable there are things in some of those documents that are relate to privacy or other issues, so it's understandable that someone at Justice needs to look through those. But it's absolutely critical that it get done. It is an incredible burden on the U.S. attorneys, who are already amazingly overburdened by what Jeff Sessions has done with this zero tolerance in immigration policy, which has significantly slowed down the ability of U.S. attorneys to do what their regular job is supposed to be, rather than insisting, as Sessions has done, on locking up people who've committed very minor misdemeanors. So it is a very unusual move, but if what Rosenstein is doing is limiting what they're doing to just looking at documents, make sure they can be turned over to the Senate, then hopefully what it'll do is to get those documents up there sooner, because one of the things that's critical is that all of Kavanaugh's background be looked at. That includes his time working for Ken Starr, on which there are thousands and thousands of documents, maybe as many as 600,000 pages or more, it's been estimated, from when he worked in the White House, including a staff secretary, where lots of paper comes through. And his role in the Bush White House has not really been fully explored, even when he was nominated to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Senator Leahy believes, even as of today, that Kavanaugh didn't totally fess up on his possible involvement in the torture policies of the Bush White House. So it's critical we get all those documents, that the Senate Judiciary Committee get them, and go through them quickly. It is an unusual move, and it's important to know exactly what those U.S. attorneys are doing, but it's also extremely important that we get those documents before any hearing is scheduled for Mr. Kavanaugh.
Yeah, especially because time is of the essence. The Republicans are going to want to ram this through as quick as possible, and it's the Democrats' responsibility to make sure that he is thoroughly vetted. And one of the questions that I brought up earlier, the Washington Post did a story on his debt problems. You know, I'm looking at this going, this looks like a gambling problem to me. Another question that should probably be brought up.
Well, he claims he was buying national tickets.
Yeah.
And it's well known that he's a Washington Nationals
fan. Sure.
But I don't know. And that's, that's certainly a legitimate question for the Judiciary Committee to be asking as part of the vetting process. And I think we don't know, unfortunately. The Judiciary Committee is chaired, of course, by the Republicans, by Senator Charles Grassley. No question he's going to vote for Kavanaugh. But the question is, will he conduct a reasonably fair hearing? In other situations, he's been known very much to favor transparency and thorough vetting. And I think the Democrats are going to push very hard, hopefully privately, if necessary publicly, for him to be as good as his word and make sure we get complete vetting of all of those issues. Another issue that's been raised is, what did Kavanaugh know about the sexual harassment being committed by Judge Kosinski, for whom he clerked and with whom he worked on committees years afterwards? Another important question. A lot of these questions that don't relate directly to his judicial record also have to be looked at carefully and thoroughly by the Judiciary Committee.
I'm right there with you. And as this continues, we'd love to have you come back and keep us up to date on how this is all going and what your thoughts are.
Happy to do it. My folks will be happy to try to get me on whenever they can.
Good stuff. Elliot, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Good to talk with you. Bye-bye.
Elliot Mintzberg, senior fellow over at the People for the American Way. You want to check out their work. They do some fantastic work. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
The world is burning through the ground.
Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in